You're listening there to a video that's been viewed over 95 million times on YouTube. It's the Korean girl group 2NE1. You get it? 2NE1? They're kind of the Spice Girls of South Korea. And they're performing a kind of music known as K-pop. That's electronic beats, futuristic visuals, bizarre but mesmerizing outfits. But these bubblegum pop songs are more than a musical genre. They're part of a Korean cultural takeover. Behind those poppy vocals is a lot of strategy. Korea has been planning its cultural dominance for nearly two decades, since a debt crisis hit the Asian continent in 1997. It's been no accident. The economic meltdown devastated a Korean economy, too dependent on huge companies like Hyundai and Samsung, and it forced them to find a way to diversify and do it fast. Yuni Hong is the author of The Birth of Korean Cool, How One Nation is Conquering the World Through Pop Culture. And she says that in those dark days of debt, Korea actually hatched an intentional plan to make themselves cool, cool in the eyes of investors and an international audience.
Literally, there is nothing that money can't buy. There are a couple of reasons why Korea pulled this off. One, the government is heavily, heavily invested in the project of making Korea cool. They hired Edelman PR, one of the biggest PR firms in the world, and said, we need a new spin to our country. Another is that their model, if you look at the things that are popular, K-pop, for example, they groom them the way that Romania grooms gymnasts. They pluck them at age 12. They start them in training. They're not even permitted to perform publicly for maybe 5 or 7 years. And what's really crucial is not just that they start rehearsing at a young age, but they start rehearsing as a group at a young age so that they look and sound in sync. And that has become the hallmark of the K-pop video. As for other aspects of Korean cool, we have the dramas, which are very popular, strangely enough, because I think I call it the Twilight effect. After Stephanie Meyer's Twilight, the world realized that there was actually a need and a want for sort of chaste, romantic dramas. And that's actually what the Korean drama provides.
So give us a couple of other examples then of Korean cool.
Well, I think that what's going to come on the horizon is the fashion, particularly the male fashion. I'm not sure this is going to take off in the U.S. because we have a very binary idea of what constitutes male clothes and what constitutes female clothes. And the K-pop look is kind of androgynous. And I would compare it to David Bowie or Elton John.
Now you're talking.
Yeah, we're going to see some Ziggy Stardust comebacks.
Now you're talking. Sign me up. I would like it if everybody walked around like the Thin White Duke. I'm there. Is this what Korea has to offer coming up?
Yes, it does. And I think Psy, he did wonderful PR for Korea. But like a lot of people, I kind of wince when he comes up because that's not what I think of when I think of Korea. The things that are really coming out of Korea are very slick, very streamlined, well-designed, architectural, just everything, just very high quality.
And now there's one aspect of pop culture that we haven't addressed, and I'm glad we left it off because we got to focus on it, video games. The Korean video game industry is in many ways dominant. Some of the most creative, most innovative video games coming out of that country. This is another sector of the industry that was intentionally developed. Explain how that happened and what the video game industry means to South Korea now.
Yes, well, this was one of the weirdest cases of making lemonade out of lemons that I can think of. After the Asian financial crisis, the unemployment rate was really, really bad, and people would go to the internet cafe all day to look for a job but also kind of goof off and play games. And people started paying attention to this shift and said, let's do something with this. Let's make games. This looks like it's going to be very profitable even in and maybe especially in a time of economic crisis. So the government, again, reached in and financed the gaming industry. This is something that could never happen in the U.S. or, in fact, any capitalist country that I can think of. But in Korea, this is how they do things. The government steps in, they throw in money, and a gaming industry was born.
We do it here, but what we do it with here is our military contractors, where the government largely finances basic research in health sciences too, but largely in the military. You raised the point in your book that Korea never had that advantage. I think your dad told you that, right?
Yes, my dad, who is a Korean economist, actually is the one who pointed out that because of a treaty between the U.S. and Korea, Korea cannot make any autonomous military decisions, so they can't wage war, and they're very, very limited in what they can develop. They're actually not supposed to develop nuclear technology at all, for example. So they don't have the advantages that every single other industrialized nation had, which was to develop technology as sort of picking up the leftovers from military research. So
yeah. Military applications that then trickle into the private economy.
Right, exactly.
GPS was developed as a military application, and now we all have it in our cars.
Right, and Korea never had that. They're developing technology for its own sake, which, as weird as it sounds, is revolutionary.
So what has that meant then for the video game industry, which started with direct government investment, something that probably wouldn't happen here in that way? We don't like that kind of government interference usually. What has that meant for where the video game industry is today?
Well, you think of K-pop as being a big business, but the Korean video game industry is 11 times more profitable than K-pop. And this addresses your earlier question of what are some things in the Korean wave that people aren't aware of. Video games would be at the top of that list. There's no cultural barriers. It's all in English, so there's no language barrier. And what they're doing that the U.S. and Japan have not done is Korea just ignored the whole console idea. They don't make an Xbox. They don't make a PlayStation. It's all 100% online games, which has meant that pretty much anyone can have access to it.
So what's your expectation then, given the explosion of K-pop, the 11 times larger video game industry, Korean dramas, what's your expectation for the next 10 years of Korean pop culture? This certainly isn't going to die down. But again, Americans don't necessarily like to get a lot of their pop culture from people they don't recognize. For us here in this country, what can we expect, do you think?
Well, this might be controversial, but the global economy is coming to the point where people are starting to realize they don't really need the American market very much anymore. It would be nice to have it, but Korea or any other country could really flourish by catering to the rest of the world and not penetrating America. And Korea is doing everything that America refuses to do, which is to say catering to the needs of the local culture and also selling to countries that are really poor and cannot even afford their products. American companies don't bother with countries that don't have money, but Korea invests in that because they know that 20 years down the line, those people will be able to buy smartphones.
You may be seeing the beginnings of a world that is leaving American pop culture and the American market behind. And Yuni Hong says that Korea is stepping in to fill the breach. Yuni, if it means that we're going to see an army of Thin White Duke, Ziggy Stardust clones on the streets of New York and across America, I might be okay with it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would be, actually.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Let me take this song. I don't want this to go legend. I know. I just said, man, I'm going to dig your nose.